For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, welcome to the TechPoint Africa podcast. My name is Emmanuel.
I'm Oluwani Femi.
I'm Chimgo Zrim.
And I'm Bolu.
So how are we doing? How's it going so far? So good.
Quite slow for me, but...
Quite low?
Slow.
Slow. Oh, wow. Where have you been?
Floating.
it's quite slow, but there's a lot of conversations going on in the internet, right? And one of the biggest conversations we're having right now is, are fintech startups in Nigeria too many? Do we have too many fintech startups in Nigeria? So let's go around, take a poll. Chingozhen, what do you think?
We don't have enough.
We don't have enough. Bolu?
I still want to build my own, so we don't have enough.
You still want to build your own? This is not Web3 issue, Andrew.
And now Web3 in fintech, fintech in Web3.
You cannot go and do agri. Okay, Onome is producing for us today, so yeah, shout out to her. Ifemi,
I think there are
too many.
Yes, for some reasons I'll mention later while we are going on in the conversation.
Okay. So Chinguzo, yeah, we gave you the heavy burden of doing research on that topic.
Okay, so like I said earlier, I don't think there are too many fintech startups. So just to be clear, until a few weeks ago, I actually believed there were too many fintech startups. I mean, when you look at the numbers, I think fintech startups typically, especially in Nigeria, they typically raise significantly more money than any other person. So you see fintech startups taking about 50 to 60% of the funding available every year, and then everybody has to share the remaining 40%. So I always felt, okay, there are too many fintech startups. But I've been having conversations with some players in this space, and I think my opinion or my views have changed since then. So to the research that kind of solidified my stance on this, we are looking at numbers now. So for India, we have 6,636 fintech startups. Mm-hmm. And the population in India is just 1.4, not just.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to ask you, 1.4 what?
1.4 billion people.
Billion, that's what you were about to say, just for. Well done.
Now for Brazil, 1,446 fintech startups for 215 million people. And 8,775 for 334.6 million people in the US.
Okay.
So when you now come back to Nigeria, where according to reports from the lead intelligence by TechPoint, Yinka Awosanya, we have at least 250 active fintech startups in the country. By the way, intelligence by TechPoint is working on a report on the fintech startup ecosystem in Nigeria. So you can watch out for that. Subscribe to the newsletter at intelligence.techpoint.africa and you get a report.
Yeah, that reminds me. Yinka said there are way more than 250.
Yes.
Way more. So Yinka, he said that himself. Okay. So, but it's not less than 250. There are way more than 250. Yes. And if you're curious, this is gathered from data around the internet and the activities of all these startups. Yeah. But is that the only number that's flowing around? I think Statista also has their own.
Yeah, so Statista says 144 as at 2021. But okay. I doubt those figures are correct, because last year there was a report by Fintech Association of Nigeria, and I think that was May 2021. And they said they had over 150 recorded fintech startups.
I see.
So in the time that has elapsed, we've had a lot of startups founded. Some that you will not know that they actually fintech startups. Some are just launching. Some are still in beta. So like, there's no universally agreed upon number. But what we can say from Yinka's research is there are at least 250 active fintech startups in Nigeria. So let's do more numbers. In India, you have one fintech startup for 210,000 people.
Okay.
In Brazil, you have one fintech startup for 148,000 people. Okay. In the US, you have one fintech startup for 38,000 people.
Okay.
In the United Kingdom, you have one fintech startup for 27,200 people.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Guess how many startups you have in Nigeria for every 100,000 people?
Based on Yinka's intelligence by TechPoint numbers, right?
Yeah. You have about one fintech for 800,000 people.
Wow.
Blows everybody out of the water. So in the words of a wise man, we need more. And by my calculations, just to get to maybe where UK, India or anyone, we need at least 1,000 more fintech startups.
So, but what are the experts saying for about this?
Okay, so we spoke to Adedeji Olowe, and he's a fintech expert, and he shared his views.
No, we don't have enough. We don't have enough lenders. We don't have enough payment processors. We don't have enough e-commerce. We don't have enough of anything. And I can't blame the people that feel they are many, because we live in a place where a lot of these things are happening. So everything feels new and everything feels, they feel overwhelmed. I don't even think the fintech and the startups in Nigeria have scratched up to 1% of any problem we want to solve. No, I don't think so. So we are not enough at all. We probably even need probably 10, 20 times more fintechs to come into this space. They create innovation, their competition creates innovation, their competition opens up the way.
So, I think this is the best time to...
Have you changed your mind?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Okay, I agree to an extent to what Adedeji Olowe is saying, mm-hmm. right? So there are a lot of problems to be solved, yeah. right?
Before you continue, sorry, Adedeji Olowe is the CEO of LendSquare and the trustee of Open Banking in Nigeria. So if you want to learn more about LendSquare and what they do, or if you want to learn more about open banking, yeah, we're going to link to that in the description. Those are aspects of fintech we have not even touched yet.
Yeah,
that talking is about problems, right? So now there are not enough, right? There are problems, of course. That is what is that is why people actually build in Africa, because there are problems. Mm-hmm. But are the existing ones solving the problems that are on ground, right? Or are there a lot of people focusing on a particular problem while leaving out the parts that are supposed to actually reach the unbanked, in quotes, which is always in their pitches. You will see financial inclusion, you will see banking the unbanked, so are they really solving?
Is now banking the next billion?
Banking the next billion.
Oh,
good.
The
unbanked can go and whatever themselves. So what I'm trying to say is that I'm not saying, if you want to look at how saturated they are on a particular problem, while they are leaving out other problems, then I don't know what they are doing there. But if they can get more, like they can become more, and they are solving problems, the real problem that's supposed to be solving, like the lending problem that Emmanuel mentioned, right? It's not just only about payment. Like, how much money do I have to move around, right? How much do I have in my account? If I, for instance, now I have 3 bank accounts with 2 traditional banks and 1 neo bank. And how much do I have to be moving around those accounts just for payment, right? But there are other problems with insurance, right? Yeah. There are problems with remittances, right? There's problem with cross-border payment. Those are the ones that should get saturated, not just I want to buy plantain in the market problem. So that is my reason. If they want to get more, they should be solving problems.
So, but I guess that maybe changes the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Because it's no longer a case of
too many fintech startups.
Yes.
But so
the ones available solving the problem.
Exactly.
And are they focused in just a few? Because fintech is not just one industry. Sorry, okay, it's one industry, but it's not like it's just one service. Mm-hmm. So you have lending, you have insurance, you have buy now, pay later, you have investments, you have payment, you have
insurance.
Yeah, so there was a 2020 McKinsey report, and according to that report, most of the fintech startups actually focus on payments and lending. So that's like true. And I just mentioned six different
problems,
subsectors of
that McKinsey report reminded me of an article I wrote based on that report that fintechs are merely scratching the surface of financial inclusion in Nigeria. And I guess when that story went live, I got a lot of sarcastic responses on Twitter. Like, of course, yeah, this is news. Wonderful revelation. But let's face it, this is 2 years on and we're still having a conversation. What problems are these? Paystack and Flutterwave are right up there with one of the best payment processors in Africa. And you're coming to tell me you're building another payment processor.
Yeah, so there are so many. In a way, the criticism is justified. You have too many startups, but you guys are just doing one or two things. And there's an argument to be made that in a few years, let's say 5-10 years, a lot of these guys are either going to die out, acquired, or they'll be doing mergers with other startups. Already it's happening. So that's the system will correct itself at some point. But there's also the part that payments and investments are kind of low-hanging fruits. So you want to build a payment startup, for example, it's a lot easier for you to build a payment startup than, say, insurance. You need data on people for you to build a very good insurance or lending, a lending solution. So I think first we have the problem of data. And we were discussing earlier, and we're like, one of the major attractions for fintech, especially to investors, is you can make a lot of money very, very quickly. So you could do like 10x to 50x of your investments. But this is for payments and all. So what happens now if I want to build data for other sectors? I have to put boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. People have to go out to gather this data. These bots can't gather the data. So if people are going out to gather this data, that means I'm paying them. And if I'm paying them, that's operational costs.
Wouldn't you just focus on
something? Why not just focus on the one that the simpler, software can just do?
Yeah, the simpler problem, so to say.
So I think the moment we have like more data on people, and thankfully we have a few companies already doing that, but I think once we have more data, then that will just correct itself naturally.
So more data, that will correct itself naturally. Yeah. So
and it's not just more data anyway, but that will go a long way. There are still other things that are needed for that to just correct yourself. I think at some point, it's going to get harder for you to raise money for a payment startup.
Okay, and so what's our verdict now?
Verdict,
based on new information.
I still believe we don't have enough, and I think in light of, you know, more information now, what the problem now is, we have more people focused on few services. But it's still not that we do not have it's still not that we do not have too much.
Okay, so Nifemi, you agree now, right? Yes or no?
Yes, I do agree that there are not enough.
Okay, so but what I'm trying to just maybe cut it short here is because Chinguzi mentioned something about lending, a critical area that we are not solving yet in Africa, or we are barely solving. And when you don't have purchasing power, then everything else you are building, I can't afford it, and it's simple as that, right? I have to put food on my table. Right? So many Nigerians need cash flow to be able to solve a lot of things, right? I got a new job. I'm thinking of how do I get a phone? How do I get a laptop? How do I get... So the whole conversation about buying our pay later has increased, right? A few podcast episodes ago, we talked about CDK, talked about many Carbon. Startups, Carbon, trying to play in the...
Buying our pay later space.
Yes, so... What is going on with that space, and are we seeing improvements? What are the issues we are currently facing? I guess there are some new updates you have for us there.
Yeah, it's interesting that buy now pay later is catching on now, right? The conversation is not even just an African thing.
Yeah,
it's a global thing. You get, and it is just being adopted in Africa. That is why there's still a buzz around it. And there's a recent conversation around how buy now pay later is looking as if it's not healthy for young people.
Yeah.
Right. I'm a very, very, like, I'm a supporter of buy now pay later from a personal experience.
So there's no wonders in your life.
Yes, because I'm a kitchen person, if you don't know, right? It's not, this is not the conversation of women should go to the kitchen kind of thing. I just love a fine kitchen. I like a kitchen that has equipment and gadgets and all. Excuse me. Now, when I was like developing my own kitchen, oh God, I can't imagine that I'm saying I have a kitchen of my own.
Developing your own kitchen.
Yes,
a developer of life.
So when I was buying stuff for my kitchen, buying up a later helped me, like, to buy stuff that I need, and I love it so much. Can't imagine that I could have owned those things. If you asked me for upfront payment for all those things that I have, I doubt if I would have half of them, right? So I'm a very strong supporter of buy now pay later. But now we are hearing that it is not healthy for young people. Now the thing, the
why
argument
is
that
so
the argument is that
things.
No, young people can have good things, fine, they should have good things, but the argument is that it's taking them into a debt trap.
Yeah,
right. Young people, when you see what you like and they're telling you that, by the way, let me just tell you about buy now pay later and what it does, like a payment plan, right, that allows you to pay for a product when in installment, you get, but you can get your product immediately or after a few payments, and some of them don't even ask you for interest.
Okay,
right, that is the catch there. There's some of them don't ask you for interest, just start your payment plan. they don't ask you for interest, and you can get your product. And that was what Emmanuel was talking about, purchasing power. Now you want something and you don't have to pay for it immediately and you get it. Tell me who will not go for it.
Okay, but so what's the problem exactly? So why is it bad for young people? Is it, and the reason they are giving, is it just peculiar to young people?
Yeah, so young people have the tendency to go on a shopping spree. Like, they see what they like, I pick
Chop
it well, I can pay for it later.
If I have you met people?
Yes. No. Have you met people? I should ask you, have you met people?
I mean, adults.
Yes,
spending.
Adults. Well, it's not as if they are spending. At that moment, does it look like spending?
Adults.
At that moment, it looks like you are getting something. It doesn't look like you are spending.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But you fail to remember or to realize that you have to pay for that thing subsequently. Yes, right. When you don't even have to pay anything at that moment, you just pick it. Then you forget that you have already, you already have three installments you are servicing. Then you go for another one. That is the part of the conversation.
Essentially a culture of debt.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So the thing is, if you, as a person, you are not financially responsible, never been financially responsible, even with loans, you cannot be financially responsible with buy now pay later. By the way, we also asked Adedeji Olowe about this because he's the founder of a lending tech platform, and he has something to say about it, right? Let's just listen to what he has to say about it.
Challenge with when you say culture of debt is that, look, anyone who will buy vicariously, right, who just buy things anyhow without thinking twice, he's always going to have a problem, even if they took a traditional loan. In fact, that person is a bigger risk. Now, the challenge or the burden for this is on the lender and not on the buyer. So basically, if I'm on Jumia and I want to buy something new, let this lender do a whole bunch of, how will I call it, the normal analytics, credit scoring. Is he owing money somewhere? Can I online real-time get access to your statement to see your capacity? And in that way, then you can make informed decisions. So
the thing is,
okay,
it is not bad on its own.
On its own. So
yes,
lending companies are supposed to be more responsible. But have you seen these post ads on Play Store? Come
so, I don't know. Should it be, is it about more responsible? So attract as more people as you want to
if
your
you come
platform.
Back and buy
you.
You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
I can only speak for myself now. I'm well, so far, I'm a responsible borrower. Like, I pay back my loan when I'm supposed to. You get, but not everybody's like that. But we want to get what we want, right? So it will come back to bite them, because they want more people on their platform, but they are not doing this thing that Adedeji just mentioned.
Due diligence on every customer, weighing their credit score, trying to make sure that, okay, this person has a history of being financially responsible.
Yeah.
So if the lending company just markets massively,
which is what they are doing,
which is what they do most of the time, right? They market massively. Oh, come and buy the latest gadgets, come and buy the laptop, come and buy the anything you can think of, right? Or just come and borrow 200,000 naira. Don't think about how you raise the money at once. Just spread the payment over a period of time.
So the thing is,
when you want to, it will attract anybody.
It will.
But when you want to collect your money back, now.
It's expensive to do due diligence.
So I'm scared for these platforms, right? Let's take up. They have to get customers, by the way. So I understand their marketing strategy, but I'm just scared for them, because a revelation from Adedeji showed that it is actually very expensive to do all these things you are talking about.
So here's the thing, right? Before I throw stone at the lenders, I would say most of them are trying, but the cost of actually doing these checks can be quite expensive. Let's take you for example. You want to buy something, or you want to take a loan, right? You say, oh, I'm poor, and they need to check your default, to check your credit bureau, right? It costs money. Like, it's not cheap. They want to check your statement. It costs money. It's not cheap. They need to use an AI to process that statement. It costs money and it's not cheap. Now, right now, even the best lenders probably do that. Maybe 1 in 15 or 1 in 20 are the ones that are able to pass through that thing. Now, so layer that up. Let's say checking credit bureau costs like 150, checking statement costs like 100, doing statement analysis like 100. They're looking at 350. So it means that they will have to go spend about 7,000 before they can find each person that will do a loan. So that's why a lot of lenders are also doing what? Cutting corners.
So
how much are you making? How much are you spending on the customer?
Just to get one user, you spend up to say 7,000 there.
7,000.
Not even to get them user. To serve a user.
So is this a recurring cost or is it one-time cost?
From the knowledge I have so far, it's usually anytime someone wants to borrow money.
You have to do all of this.
You have to do that to check. So someone wants to borrow money. He has borrowed money before, right? And he's borrowing again. You have to actually check if that person has borrowed money before. When he borrowed money before, what did he do with it? Did he pay back on time?
On other platforms too.
Yeah. You have to also check, has he gone on to borrow money on other platforms? And this data is what the credit bureau actually houses, right? So, but the credit bureau is expensive, like you just mentioned, and companies, sometimes the big guns like the Carbons or the Fair Money, have probably built their own infrastructure, and we probably don't share the data with each other. We've actually had that conversation before. Fintech startups not sharing information. So that's when you begin to appreciate startups like Mono that builds an API to connect these fintech, these banking apps together. So with just an API call, you can just get everybody's, just an individual's financial information and so there are other startups apart from Mono that are now building it for the purpose of lending. LendSquare, Karma Chain is building. So someone, a driver who doesn't earn a salary, how do you get a credit score for that person? The market woman, how do you get a credit score? But the driver who is probably coming to the park every morning, he pays the park people with tickets and is consistent with that ticket payment. That should tell you something, that okay, this person is actually financially responsible.
Well, how do you capture this digitally? Because if you can't capture it digitally, it becomes difficult. I think it's something that there's a whole lot that goes into it, and probably as time goes on, they'll figure it out, because you already have like traditional lenders in quote who use, they don't use digital methods to do all of this, but a lot of them manage risk by lending to people who are only doing business. So if you're borrowing from me to fund your lifestyle, get out. And it makes more business sense to them, because one, you'll be borrowing larger sums, and two, if your business goes under, like, I think you'll be more invested in making sure your business does not go under, mm-hmm. then it, because last, you default on payment for your gen, they come and carry your gen, life goes on. But if your business goes under, you've lost your source of livelihood. So maybe business lending is the way to go for now.
I'm wishing them the best, rather, and because they're helping lives here.
Helping lives, right?
Put them in your prayers.
talking about helping lives, right? I just mentioned a random driver who is probably not captured digitally in any way, right? His morning to evening is totally on cash. But somewhere, somehow, the Nigerian government has thought up a solution based on blockchain. I'm putting air quotes as I'm talking right now. And they're saying it's going to boost financial inclusion. And they've upgraded it. And behold, ladies and gentlemen, that feature is called the e-Naira. How many downloads? Good. So, okay. Yes, give us a crash course on what the e-Naira is all about right now.
Okay, so the e-Naira is the Central Bank of Nigeria's CBDC. CBDC is a central bank digital currency. It's a currency built on the blockchain. It works just like a cryptocurrency, but it is not a cryptocurrency. Nigeria's e-Naira is built on a blockchain system called the Hyperledger Fabric, which is a private blockchain, which means the CBN can control everything that happens on that blockchain. The CBN is responsible for consensus mechanisms, what kind of consensus mechanism is being used, how many nodes are there, who are the people that are able to verify transactions. So that's basically what the e-Naira is. And now we have an upgrade to the e-Naira.
So what is that supposed to do for me?
So the e-Naira came out last year, October. It was supposed to come out October 1, 2021, but we didn't see it. But then we saw it October 24 or 25, I can say for sure now. So, but we saw it some weeks later, and yes, there was a lot of noise about it. There was a lot of buzz, but after some time, everything died down. You know, I've been talking to people about the e-Naira, and I'm like, have you been using e-Naira? People are like, e-what? And then you'll be surprised that, you know, even people that are, you know, pro-blockchain, they are very pro-blockchain. Anytime you talk about anything blockchain, they are there. And then you expect people like this to really use such solutions. And I asked them, and they are like, I'm not using that thing. I don't even know. I try to use it, because if you know me, I'm a pro-blockchain person. I try to use it, and I was not even able to register in the first place, talk less of using it. Cool. So now, yes, I was not able to. So now there's an upgrade to it, and it's quite promising. Well, I know some people will disagree with me, but I think it's quite
Mention
promising.
My name with your chest. Mention my name.
Yeah. So the CBN branch controller for Lagos, Mr. Barry Boloka Kayo, revealed at a sensitization campaign at the Cairo Market in Oshodi, Lagos, that bill payments will now be coming to the e-Naira. This means you can now use your e-Naira to pay for your DSTV, use your e-Naira to pay for your light bills.
Why?
Use your e-Naira to even pay for air flight tickets.
Why? Why will I do that?
So you will want to do that because you get free transactions on the e-Naira. You don't have to pay for transactions when you use the e-Naira. Cool. So if you send...
Is this a marketing tactic, or is how it would always be?
I think it's how it will always be, because from the knowledge I have with blockchain, it's quite, you know, if you have a good consensus mechanism, it is quite simple to offer transaction. So say for example a blockchain like Solana now, where you can see thousands of transactions per second at very minimal cost, like that's pretty insane. So now we have a government that can control these things by themselves. So it means that they can offer transactions at zero charges, because they are the one that built their infrastructure. The infrastructure is for them.
Okay.
So they're able to offer transactions at zero charges.
They
so
built the infrastructure, or they contracted someone?
They contracted, yes. They contracted
and left
someone.
All our developers here,
yes,
hanging. Okay,
so they control the blockchain.
Off your mic.
Essentially, they control the blockchain, so they will be able to offer these transactions at zero charges.
So I find it interesting that the CBN, we've been trying to fight for free transactions so far so good with the CBN in the past 3 years, but they are doing it with the e-Naira. So Are they trying to say, okay, leave your banks, leave your fintechs and use the e-naira? Is that what the CBN is saying? Or is that what they're pushing for indirectly?
No, I think they want it to exist, to coexist.
Okay.
Your banking, the normal banking infrastructure.
If transaction is free, why should I use any fintech or banking app that charges me?
You can decide not to use any bank again if you think the e-naira will work well for you.
But this transaction thing is a two-way thing,
yes,
right?
Yes.
What if the person I'm transacting with doesn't want e-naira?
So from your e-naira wallet app, you can actually send money to a normal bank account.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So which makes it really cool. So if I'm sending money to Onome now, because I'm always owing Onome for some reason.
Wow.
So if I want to pay her back now, I can send it to a bank and it's free. And I think that's pretty awesome. And then there's another interesting thing about the upgrade, which is USSD. And I think that can really push the the financial inclusion
I'm
narrative.
Smiling at you. USSD. So yeah, I've heard this several times, right?
Yes.
Startups, fintech companies, once they say USSD, everybody starts shouting financial inclusion.
Mm.
But we've had USSD for some time now. What's been going on? So what changes with USSD?
So I think what happens now is with the e-naira USSD, it means that we don't know exactly how it's going to function, but now we know that you can access the e-naira with USSD. So once you dial *997#, you'll be able to access your the e-naira. So for now, if you dial it, it will tell you that the service is...
Why do you not tell me?
I saw you trying to dial it, so I just need to tell you before you start bashing the e-naira.
Is it active already?
So, I don't think it's active already, because according to TechNext, they said these upgrades will be coming next week.
Okay.
So, but if when you dial it, it tells you that the service will be restored shortly. Mm-hmm. So I think that's obvious that they are working on it currently. So I think what changes...
I've seen this before with the Apple.
Yes.
You know how long we downloaded app before we saw app?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, we saw all that. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
All
let's
right.
wait till next week. Let's okay. see what happens. So what changes now that we have USSD is that I'm just going to make an educated guess or suggestion here and say that you'll be able to register for the e-naira, you know, have your own e-naira wallet with that USSD. So you can dial and just say, okay, this is my name, provide your NIN, and then automatically you get an e-naira wallet that you can access via USSD. So you don't need to have a smartphone to send money or receive money. You can just do that simply with USSD. And I think this presents an opportunity for people who do not have smartphones. I'm going to assume that most people that have smartphones could have bank accounts. So you notice that people that live in a lot of these rural areas
mm-hmm.
usually use feature phones where you can use WhatsApp and all these, you know, sophisticated apps that we have on.
He says sophisticated.
They actually apps that only work with smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually presents an opportunity for them to be financially included. So I'm
but,
sure
well, but there are still existing problems, right? With
yes.
your NIN, the verification issue that is going on, BVN.
Yes.
My bank verification numbers, it's not everybody that have it.
Exactly.
And all.
Exactly. So the thing with the e-naira is, let me address the bank verification number issue firstly. So the thing with the e-naira is you can actually open an e-naira wallet without your bank verification number. So the e-naira wallet is in three tiers, right? So you have the first tier where you can open without your bank verification number, but just with your NIN. But the only drawback with this is that your daily transfer limit is 50,000 naira. That's $121.
Mm-hmm.
So the next stage, the next year, now you need to have a bank account and you need to have a bank verification number.
Mm-hmm.
And then your daily transaction limit is 200,000
naira.
So, yes, 200,000 naira, which is $486. And then the third tier, which also requires a BVN, at least a BVN, gives you a transaction limit of 1 million naira. daily.
Okay, so I think I understand what's going on here. They're trying to get the Inera to as many people as possible, exactly, and develop possible use case, because that's a question all of us were asking. And since the NIN is like the KYC method, that's about 75 million people who have registered for NIN.
Yeah.
BVN is 55 million, roughly 55 million.
Yeah.
So we're looking like 20 million people extra to come into the financial space. Ideally, right? Ideally. All things being equal. So, but there are other issues we've not talked about, right? Security issues, verification issues, and what's the incentive? How do you get this feature to people we've been talking about, right? The average driver that spends all his money on cash, why should he care about the Inera? Woman in the village or the man in the village, why should they care about the Inera? But I'm not expecting you to answer that question.
Okay.
I can just... Those in the cities are not even bothered.
I'll just attempt to answer those questions and say that for someone in the rural area that does not have proximity to a bank, an account that you can simply open on your phone without having to go to a bank to complete
mobile money.
It is
mobile money.
Exactly. So just why mobile money.
Okay, let's not go there. Let's not go there, please. So, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
There are a lot of interesting conversations to be had, and I'm sure you, who is listening right now, you have a lot of things to talk about, right? So why not tweet at us with the hashtag TechPointAfricaPodcast, or email us with the email podcast@techpoint.africa. So if you're listening to us for the first time, or you've listened to this episode and you feel like this should get to a lot more people, right? People should know more about fintech. They should know more about buy now, pay later. They should know more about Inera. Yes, where can you get the podcast, Ifemi?
Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Podcast Addict, and everywhere else you get your podcast from.
Yeah, so yeah, anywhere you got your podcast, anywhere you're listening to us, just share, and have a lovely day.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.